down towards the near corner. Cody Eakin goes in shorthanded, feeds in front, score! It's Carlson! William Carlson shorthanded. Miller, right point shot, score! Tipped out in front, and it's 4-0 Vegas. Here comes Lindbergh, going to get ahead of the defense. He pulls it away, goes circle, he shoots, he scores! Oscar Lindbergh! Now a breakaway, here's David Perron, all by himself, the righty down the middle, fakes, backhand score! David Perron, 1-0 Vegas! Here's Hunt, setting up his man in front, Carrier, score! It's his first goal, William Carrier, 7-0 Vegas!
And welcome in, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, a day after a pretty electric atmosphere at T-Mobile Arena as your Vegas Golden Knights improved to 22-9-2 with 46 points on the ledger, high atop not just the Pacific Division but the Western Conference. Clayton Hamilton here sitting in for Frank Harnish along with Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Chris Chapman, both of whom were in the building last night. And by the third period, fellas, I'm off to the beer house to do the post-game show, so I have to watch it on the television, but I can only imagine that the atmosphere inside the arena when Shea Theodore put the game winner in was palpable.
So there's a video that I put up on Twitter a couple of weeks ago where when the goal horn sounds, you can actually see popcorn jumping up in the press box. I mean, it's insane how loud that building is. And then Chris and I were talking last night. That was the absolute loudest we have ever heard that building. It was the craziest, most ridiculous Intuit crowd we've seen at a game all year, period.
If I turn my mic on, yeah. Yeah, you think the guy who runs the board would know to turn the mic on, right?
It was so loud you couldn't hear yourself.
Yeah, I'm still trying to get over it. No,
I'm still recovering.
The atmosphere was incredible, but I mean, the ref you suck chance, the Flurry chance.
That was the first ref you suck chant that we've had in T-Mobile history.
But like we were talking about, me and Ryan last night, the crowd absolutely understood what was at stake, who they were playing. You know, it was really incredible. But when Theodore scored that goal, I mean, we're high up. My chest was vibrating. You could feel the energy just going through your body. I mean, I'm a pretty heavy guy. I mean, I got a gut, a little overweight, but I could feel everything inside of me shaking. I'm like, what is going? It's like an earthquake. I mean, no, really, it is. The atmosphere is incredible.
I just call that waking up. I just call that Monday.
But the crowd is it was electric. I mean, and I think a lot of people in the media were really talking about it, and I know some of the players in the Lightning were talking about it, and certainly some of the Golden Knights players talked about how just incredible the crowd was, the atmosphere.
No, it was absolutely ridiculous. And again, it's these moments outside of the goals, outside of the big saves. It's these moments where you're a hockey fan and you see Derek Englund take a penalty in the waning moments of the game where you understand if your stick breaks, you have to drop it. You're not allowed to play with a broken stick. If you do, it's a penalty. So you drop your stick and and it happens to coincide with a Lightning player skating into said broken stick. Stick hits the puck. It prevents or it stops the momentum of that player. And then all of a sudden, the Golden Knights are getting called for a penalty. And you're saying to yourself, what's going on? And the fans are well aware that he's getting a penalty for throwing his stick. When he did nothing of the sort, he was dropping it so as to not break a rule in the rule book and ends up getting a penalty anyway. And when you've got a 3-3 game with 3 minutes left, that's a really soft call. It really, really is. And the fans let the referees know they were not happy. And those are those moments where you start to realize that this fan base isn't a novice fan base. They've been around since the Thunder. They've been around through the entire history of the Las Vegas Wranglers, and they know hockey. And they understand the rule book, and they were not happy, they were not pleased that game, that gem of a game that we got last night, could have been decided by a really crappy call. And then, you know, some would say on the Tampa Bay side that the game was decided by a really crappy call.
And to go one further with that, and that being a big moment, there are smaller moments where you get just so proud of the crowd for understanding the situation, seeing William Karlsson pinned against the boards and kicking the puck free up to the blue line, or when you see a potential two-on-one developing that gets thwarted in the neutral zone, and the roar that's coming for those plays is every game growing.
Yeah, and you're starting to see fans get in tune with what's happening on the defensive end of the puck, and there were moments where Shea Theodore, it was a perfectly timed poke check. It was really good body position to break up plays. And then it was his little adventure right there with about 6 minutes left where he used his skating to elude pressure, but he did so right into the slot and almost got picked off. And the crowd was oohing and aahing and living and breathing with every single change of momentum in the game. And they were so in tune to that game. And both teams were so fast and so good. I mean, it was a gem of a hockey game. It was probably the best game of the year, hands down. And it was an expansion team and the best team in the league.
A lot of power play goals last night. The Lightning got out to a quick two-goal lead, but Vegas fought back in the second period, getting two power play goals of their own, James Neal, Jonathan Marchessault. And then came the goal that we all thought was going to be the game winner when the Golden Knights went up 3-2 on the stick of Eric Halla. And this is your best mattress play of the game, best mattress, best service, best selection, best price guaranteed.
Vegas wins the draw. Theodore to the right side, Perron. Two assists here today. Back to Theodore in the middle. He shoots. Score! It's Halla with the tip. Power play goal for Vegas. 3-2 Golden Knights.
That made it 3-2 Golden Knights right at the top of the third period. And what a beautiful play by Eric Halla to see that shot and tip it home.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about two games now in a row where he's managed to get a goal that he's tipped in. And yeah, I think he's got 10 goals in the third period now this year, which just goes to show you that he's chipping in when it matters most, obviously. And I mean, this is the Vegas Golden Knights. It's the team. They were a better team 5-on-5 last night than the Tampa Bay Lightning. They weren't able to solve Vasilevsky. This is a team that hasn't scored many power play goals over the last three or four games. And then it's a team that recognized that if they were going to get back in this game, it was going to be on the power play and not wasting those opportunities. And not only did they not waste them, they converted and changed the momentum of the game to where they were actually the ones in control heading into the third period.
And they carried the play throughout the rest of that third period, all the way really till the end, till Victor Hedman went ahead and tied it up on a really beautiful shot past Marc-Andre Fleury. And then it set the stage for Shea Theodore, who already had three assists on the evening, to become the player of the game. Shea Theodore, your player of the game, brought to you by Brinkus Team Realty, your home sold, guaranteed.
Neal and Perron trying to work it out. 9 seconds to go. Halla tries to fish it loose. 6 seconds left. Halla gets it up top. Marchessault to the right. Big shot! Score! Shea Theodore! Vegas takes the lead 4-3! 2.3 to go!
And Shea Theodore, for a guy that you've been very high on since training camp, who was fighting things a little bit the past couple of games, to have a breakout performance like tonight, you got to see all of those tools that you've been waiting to see.
Yeah, what's funny about it is you and I and Frank, we had a chance to talk to Shea Theodore yesterday before the game, and I think I asked him, what do you have to do to break through on the power play? And he just said, simplify it, don't overpass, shoot the puck. And what did he do? Shot the puck. The goal that Halla scored was off of a shot from Shea Theodore. His game-winning goal was a shot, a quick decision. Obviously, there's a few seconds left, but you got to get the puck to the net in order to score, right? And so what I love about Shea Theodore, what I love about the fact that he had a four-point night, that he broke out, that he finally showed you that he's capable of chipping in offensively like that as a defenseman, it was the plays that he was making away from the puck in his own zone, where you started to get the idea that he's going to be a true number one defenseman. And it's coming because he's getting to play. It's coming because he's working through games and getting an opportunity to play the next game after a game like he had against Florida, where he wasn't very good, where he was fighting the play, where he wasn't very good in his own zone. And he gets a chance to get right back out there, play again, and he's better. And that's the improvement you want to see from that guy.
He certainly showed that last night, and it was a real good night for that power play, because when you look at the Neal and Perron a power play with Marchessault and Howla. They've scuffled a little bit as of late, and you see when you kind of compare the two power play units, they were lagging a little bit behind in chances from the Colin Miller, Alex Tuck power play, and it was really good to see them click last night.
Yeah, it all fell into place, and that's why, again, you look at Shea Theodore, that's why you have him out there on the ice. That's why you invest so much in that player. He's the quarterback. He's the guy that everything runs through because he can get his shots through. He can skate well enough to elude some pressure and kind of exploit those odd man situations in the offensive zone, and that's why you have him there. I think it took a little bit more time than they expected, but if they can get both units to go, then this could be a very, very, very dangerous team.
And full marks to the Golden Knights, and we heard that over and over again from the Tampa Bay Lightning last night, not just from the players, for the coaches, about how the team played, the atmosphere in the arena, you know, reflections on the game. And you were part of the press pool that was able to catch up with Steven Stamkos when he addressed the media and had these thoughts on Vegas the team, Vegas the city, Vegas the venue.
Crappy way to lose a hockey game. I mean, we fight back to tie the game. You know, I don't think anyone would have complained if he doesn't call that penalty on them at the end. I mean, that's a iffy call, and then I think he feels the need to make up for a mistake. And at that point in the game, you know, the puck's in the corner, there's a battle going on, and, you know, I know it's tough. I just think it was the wrong call at that time of the game, and it ruined a pretty exciting hockey game that was probably going to go to overtime and get this crowd even more excited. But it's a tough way for us to lose, especially, you know, we were short some guys tonight, kind of out of the blue unexpectedly, so we had to put a tough game plan together. That's a really good hockey team over there, and an unbelievable atmosphere to play in, and they feed off that. And
one even strength goal tonight, it seemed like it was a lot of special teams tonight.
Yeah, I mean, that's sometimes the games go like that, but again, that's the standard we set in this room. It's not acceptable to give up four power play goals in a game. You know, our power play guys will be the first ones to tell you, you know, when we have off games that it's unacceptable. And tonight, I think the guys know it's unfortunate, and it's just tough to win when you give up four, you know, penalty kill goals. But those guys have worked extremely hard this year. They'll bounce back. We'll make some adjustments. But it's just a tough one at the end there to give up, obviously, with 2 seconds left.
You briefly talked about the crowd. Did it feel like a playoff atmosphere out there?
It was the best atmosphere I've played in a regular season game in a long time. So it was pretty cool just to get up for warm-ups and see the intensity. And yeah, first you know, couple periods, it was such a fast-paced game. It was fun to play in, and you know, you wonder why it took so long to get a team here.
Did they tweak anything on the PK later in the game?
I don't think so, no. I mean, 2 for 4, 2 for 5, usually take those all night. Obviously, we'd like to get one there at the end. It probably changes the game, but, you know, we just didn't execute as well. But, you know, they're not going to roll over and die, so they have a say in it too, and their goaltender made some good saves. You know, it wasn't the best third period for us, but end of a road trip, down a few guys. You know, we found a way to tie the game, which is what we wanted to do. It was too bad we couldn't get it overtime.
Mission out of the blue as far as...
It was Steven Stamkos, the passive-aggressive one, who said, bad call at the end that ruined the game. We were missing some players, but they're a really good team, and the crowd was awesome.
Yeah, it's tough because you got to understand what we're walking into, right? So this is a team that shouldn't lose to the Golden Knights, right? Like that's the storyline going into it. Is the yes, of course, the Golden Knights are off to a great start, 21-9-2, but it's still the Tampa Bay Lightning. It's still the best team in the league right now. It's still the highest powered offense and one of the best defenses in the league and a great goalie and all that. But they just got they were skated with. The Golden Knights went toe to toe with this team. And were better. Not just because of power plays, but 5-on-5, they were better than Tampa was. And so you can throw excuses out there all you want to, which is fine. You know, you can blame the referees all you want to, which is fine. I do respect Stamkos for saying that no one would have complained if they didn't call that penalty on England. And, you know, I agree with that. I don't think either one of those penalties should have been called. But I do have an issue with trying to blame illness. I have an issue with that because it doesn't matter who you go to battle with. You're going to battle, and that's what it is, and that's what your lineup is. And you should be a deep enough team, a deep enough organization, that if you lose a couple of guys, because, well, we all know Vegas has lost four goalies this year. If you lose a couple of guys, it shouldn't matter. Bottom line, if you're a good team, from an organizational standpoint, you should be able to put anybody in there and still play your game.
Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Clayton Hamilton, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, Chris Chapman breaking down last night's 4-3 victory by the Golden Knights over the Tampa Bay Lightning. And Ryan, it's a little bit of a news storyline, perhaps blaming the real flu over the Vegas flu.
Sure,
but Greg Wyshynski, who is a good friend of the program, was kind enough to sit down with us right here in studio yesterday, wrote a piece for ESPN about the Vegas flu and sort of looking at all the factors that are involved. Can you believe that at this point that this is still a thing?
See, it's hard because you've got to quantify what it is, right? So you've got to quantify, is it guys going out and getting hammered? Is it guys going out and just maybe losing track of time? Because we all know that casinos don't have clocks. You have no idea what time. There's no concept of where you are in the day, period, like none. So is it just something that messes with your schedule just a little bit enough to throw you off? Is it going to nightclubs? Is it, you know, I don't know. His article, which you're going to reference here in a minute, that he was working on last night, I think opens up a little bit more as to what exactly the Vegas flu might be, what you can use to quantify it, and then we can kind of determine if it's a real thing or not.
Well, St. Louis Blues general manager Doug Armstrong, whose team, as we remember, lost 3-2 in overtime here in Vegas, says there's a lot to distract you here in Vegas. I think the first couple of years, it's certainly going to happen. That's going to test the honesty and maturity of our team.
Yeah, see, and again, I just, the distraction angle, I get it in so much as, this is a brand new city. It's a brand new facility. Staying in a hotel in Vegas is significantly different than staying in a hotel in Buffalo, New York, or staying in a hotel in, you know, Arizona, whatever. I get that part of it. But, you know, he also brings up in the article that there are teams that have stayed at different hotels to try to avoid the casino atmosphere, to avoid walking past the tables, to avoid all that stuff. And I think, if you're trying to consciously avoid something, you're spending too much energy thinking and focusing on it, that even that can become a distraction. Like, the idea that you need to avoid distractions becomes a distraction in and of itself.
We certainly saw that affect the Blackhawks when they went to Vancouver, right? Remember the Roxy flu?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Where Patrick Kane, John Madden, and Christopher Teague were photographed shirtless inside a limo with a number of local ladies mm-hmm. that live yep. there. So it can find you in Vancouver. It can find you in Las Vegas. What I found fascinating was the chemical toxicologists that have been brought in to comment on this, yep. mm-hmm. and they say that the chemicals that create a so-called ambiance in the casino tend to interact with smoke and create a synergistic effect. So you're really creating another problem, says Angel DeFazio, the president of the Las Vegas-based National Toxic Epithelanopathy. Wow, I can't. Foundation. The NTEF, we'll just call it. The NTEF.
Yeah, so I guess that's part of the smoke in the smoke and mirrors, right?
Could be.
That would be what you consider the smoke. You know, again, listen, I am not suggesting that Vegas isn't unique in what things there are to distract you from the job that you have to do. But they're professional athletes. And if you've got a game, well, maybe their team should stop coming into town 2 to 3 days early. Well, there's one. Mm-hmm. Maybe tack a day on after if you're not playing back-to-backs. But two, if you're a general manager and you're a coach and you go into a city and your players aren't doing the things away from the rink that they need to do to be successful, that's an organizational issue that needs to be addressed. Because you're going to have to play in Vegas. So you're going to have to figure it out. You're going to have to find a way to put all those distractions aside. And if you can't do that, then you need to reassess how you scout your talent, what players you bring into your organization, and maybe even who's coaching them. Because at some point, there needs to be some responsibility taken by these individual players, and it not just being, well, you know, Vegas, it's an entertaining city, and there's stuff to do, and, you know, it's not like other cities. I just think it's a cop-out after you lose a game. I think it's an absolute cop-out.
Well, according to Angel DeFazio of the NTEF, they're perhaps suffering from radioactive airway disorder syndrome, which apparently you can catch in an afternoon.
Yeah, no, that sounds totally, totally feasible. Probably the reason.
Probably. Maybe Vegas. Excuse me. I have a little.
You've got
little,
the Vegas flu.
Oh yeah, I do. I have a little. What is it? Reactive airway disorder syndrome. Probably just from sitting outside for 3 hours in the cold last night. But yeah, maybe they're just a good team. Do you think that the national narrative after last night, because you know how people like to overreact, and we have fun with overreaction here, that the narrative was going to be if they won last night, they're now a good team, and if they lost last night, oh, look, we were right, they're not any good, the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah, we talked about this earlier in the week, that there seems to be this stigma with the team where, like, the next big game is their proving ground until they win it. And then, oh, wait, but there's a bigger game on the horizon. And then they win that. And then, but no, there's a bigger game on the horizon. Like, the Penguins, that was a big win. But, like, now it's Tampa, right? Mm-hmm. So then you beat Tampa. But now it's like, oh, well, you know, Alex Ovechkin scored 23 goals this year, and Washington looks really good. So now it's Washington. Like we'll admit that you're good after you beat Washington.
Well, my issue with the whole you're good, you're not good is the fact that they're 8-7-1 on the road. They have a winning record on the road. They just went to Dallas and Nashville, won two games against two pretty good teams on the road. So this, well, it's only happening in Vegas. You know, maybe you catch somebody by surprise, but we're now towards the end of December. You're not catching anybody by surprise. You're going to get teams' best efforts because they want to come in here and they want to beat the expansion team because they want to prove that this team isn't as good as people say they are. And I think they're getting everyone's best effort. It's not that.
And let's talk about this really quick. When you talk about their road record, their 8-7-1 road record, four of those losses came on that first six-game road trip where they lost Oscar Dansk and went to their fourth-string goalie. Okay? So from that point forward, they have been above, like, well above 500 on the road. So that's not, like, to me, that's not even a point anymore.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I mean, every game they play, with the exception of the Edmonton game, is within one goal in the third period. So it's not like they're going on the road in these games that they lost where they've gotten smashed. I mean, they had the lead in the Rangers game when they gave up a couple goals, a couple penalties in that third period. You know, the Wild game, they were right there in the third period. The Winnipeg game, again, right there, they just had a bad third period. So it's not that they're getting beat bad on the road. They're in every single game.
And that's the point. That's why this team is good. It has nothing to do with beating the Tampa Bay Lightning. It has nothing to do with beating Chicago or Pittsburgh or any of those teams. Top to bottom, look at all of their games this season. Has there been one game outside of the Edmonton game where you have sat there and looked at that team heading into the third period and you said, they're out of this game? No.
Yeah.
That's one game out of 33 out of 33 games. They have been out of just one in the third period.
I think though, guys, you're forgetting about the hallmark of the conspiracy theory, and that is, right, the big asteroid's going to destroy the Earth in 2012 until it doesn't, and then it's 13, and then it's 15, and then it's next month. And that's the hallmark of these theories of that we're now. They're not going to be any good if they can't beat Alex Ovechkin. And they're not going to be any good if they can't go on the road back-to-back in Anaheim and L.A. And I think there's an awful lot of credence to everything that you've said, Ryan.
No, and it's just, it's going to be, okay, well, they beat Tampa in in Tampa and they weren't at full strength. So let's see how they go when they let's see how the game goes when they go into Tampa and they go into that hostile territory. And I don't think they're going to have to worry about it.
Let's see how they play during playoff hockey, because playoff hockey is different and we could be on the verge of that a little early to get too excited, but I'd certainly rather be where we are than where we were projected to be. So good on you, Vegas Golden Knights. When we come back, though, we're going to check in with David Perron, who has a different theory on why the Golden Knights have succeeded. You're listening to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for hockey in the Valley. And welcome back. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Clayton Hamilton, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, Chris Chapman behind the board. Having a great time talking about last night's victory 4-3. The Golden Knights getting the best of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And we had talked about some reaction from the world of ESPN and NHL.com and the pundits about the country. Still hanging on to, clinging to the Vegas flu as reasons as to why this team is high atop the Western Conference with 22 victories against only 9 defeats and 2 losses in overtime, 46 points for the Golden Knights. A pretty good season thus far. Still more work to do, but have to be proud of the effort thus far. And David Perron, he offered some thoughts last night on the game, and he wrote a wonderful piece today that we will get into. But here's David Perron on last night's performance.
I don't know. Almost is for sure. I thought it was for sure. It was this crowd is unbelievable. It's the best in the league, and we're so lucky and extremely proud of the way our crowd is responding for us. Down 2-0, and we score a goal, and it's like the whole building comes alive, and you know you're gonna have a chance to come back in this game. Almost because of them. So started from the first game, first day, and even at practice this morning, it's Tuesday morning, the practice is full. Almost like we don't know what's going on here, but we're extremely lucky and we want to keep this going.
And that pace that Tampa Bay plays with,
yeah. Yeah. Right? Yeah, they have different combination that really test you in different ways, and we knew that if we play down there, we would be able to create some chances. Again, our 5-on-5 game, we thought we had the better play, and I obviously at the end of the day, 2 on the power play. But after the first period, we're down by 2, and that's what we're saying in here. Keep going 5-on-5, stay out of the box, and we're going to find a way to come back. And tonight we did it with our power play, but we also had many chances at 5-on-5.
And yeah. What's impressive is that you guys can keep up with a team like that at 5-on-5 pace. So is this one of the fastest paced teams that you ever played with?
Yeah, I mean, the speed is there for sure. You can look at speed different way. Like right. If you're executing, you look faster.
The puck moves.
Yeah, like our our line with me and Nealer and Holla, we know that Holla is pretty fast, and then me and Nealer obviously we're keeping up with him. But I think it's our play in the O-zone that's really making a difference. We don't lose the puck easy. We're hard to play against, and that's what we're trying to do. And I think when we do that, we look faster through everything neutral zone, and it slows down their guys because they're tired in there. They can't go out on offense as quick as they want.
One of the things about this team, everyone said, you know, the guys come out fast, start fast in the first period. But now lately, you guys are a better team in the third period. So what's allowed you to make that transition, what's making that possible for you guys?
It's huge because early in the year, I don't know if you remember, but we had a few games like the Detroit won our first loss. When Flower got hurt, a couple of games after that too, our third periods weren't the greatest. We would find a way to get points. And now, like you said, we're starting to put 60 minutes effort and keep getting better throughout the game, basically the whole game. So it's a good sign for us, and obviously we know that we can always get better, and we're going to look to do that in the next couple days and look to beat a good Washington team.
It was David Perron talking about last night's victory and about the team getting better as the game goes along. And Ryan, that's one of the things that we've seen with the Golden Knights as of late, starting to get better as games go along. And what was really interesting was their ability to win the second period last night, 2 mm-hmm. goals to none. And a lot of times you attribute that to a team that's willing to skate and willing to make good, crisp, clean changes. And Tampa Bay came in plus 21. Tampa Bay has been that team all season in their games, but not last night.
No, and I think that you talk about the pace of the game. You talk about the things that David Perron was just talking about. And he's so humble when it comes to this team's speed. because I think that he looks at it when we in the media say speed, we're talking about individual players. But what he's talking about is team speed, playing fast, putting the puck where it needs to be in order to advance it as quickly as you possibly can. And that's what the Golden Knights do so well. They skate so well, and they've got that chemistry, that synergy on pretty much every line that they have, that they're able to read and assess and understand where each other are going to be almost before they're there. So that it makes it really difficult on other teams, especially slower teams, but even on Tampa, they just couldn't adjust to a team matching them speed for speed. And so what I like about what David Perron says is you look at Halla, and he's the fast guy, and we keep up with him, but that's by design. Because you get the puck thrown into the zone, you get Erik Halla to go in there and retrieve it and get it to Neil, or you get it to Perron, and then once those guys have the puck in the offensive zone, they're really hard to get the puck away from. And that allows Halla to speed around and open up angles and open up seams, and that's why they work as a line. And so you sit there and you sit back and you think about it, and then you look at Jonathan Marchessault, Riley Smith, and William Karlsson, and it's almost the exact same thing. Karlsson is the speedster. Riley Smith is the really defensively responsible guy, and then Jonathan Marchessault is the guy that will shoot the puck from absolutely anywhere because you need that on your line, and that's what works. And they buy in, and they play 60 minutes. At the beginning of the year, when they got into trouble, they weren't playing 60 minutes.
And one of the things that gets lost in the speed was what happened with Shea Theodore on the game-winning goal. Sometimes speed is the quickness in his ability to settle the puck and get the shot off. And we saw that not just with that, but with the Halla goal as well, that he had to settle it, flick the wrister up there, and there you have it.
Well, and it's one of those situations, too, where you look at that last play of the game. It was a board battle for 14 seconds. I mean, Tampa tried their best to pin that puck up along the boards and just let it be. Ride it out, get a point, see what happens in overtime. But you had Neil, you had Perron, you had Halla, and they were all working. And it didn't matter how many seconds ticked off the clock, they were still going to work, they were still going to go to battle. It finally squeaks through with 4 seconds left, and there were two passes and a shot in 4 seconds. And it was Howell's decision to go back to Marchessault. It was Marchessault's quick decision to hit Theodore. And it was Theodore making the only play that was there, and that was a slap shot. Like that's why you play 60 minutes. You don't play 59 minutes and 58 seconds. And that's what Tampa did, and that's why they lost.
David Perron, more introspective than just a guy that talks about X's and O's. He went to the Players Tribune and penned a piece about his experience in becoming a Vegas Golden Knight. You can catch that and read it at Players Tribune. You can also look for the links of that. I know Ryan has tweeted it out, so go to @RyanHockeyGuy. Get the link to that. I've tweeted it out as well, @Clayton_JoeFan, if you want to read the article that we're going to talk about. And it's very introspective, and it gives you a look at David Perron beyond just the guy that scores goals,
right,
or the guy that gets in a few too many pushing matches after the whistle goes, perhaps.
No,
and,
not at all.
And you really start to see the introspective side of him. And the piece begins with the moments before he found out that he could be a Golden Knight out on a lake in Quebec with his son, thinking about his future as a professional hockey player.
Yeah, and it's great because as a pro, you never want to leave the team that drafted you. And for Perron, it was an interesting situation. He was drafted by St. Louis. He moved around a little bit, came back to St. Louis. And he says in the piece, "I thought I played well enough to earn my spot on the team this year. But things just didn't work out." And when a name like David Perron is available in the expansion draft, and your general manager, Doug Armstrong, can't work out a deal to further protect you, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, George McPhee is a smart enough guy to not pass up on that. Whether he was going to play Perron or try to move him for something, he's an asset, no matter what. But where you go from there is a guy in David Perron who recognized that Marc-Andre Fleury would be a part of this team. And the text message part of the piece was what I found to be most interesting. David Perron writes that he texted Marc-Andre Fleury one word. It was Vegas with a question mark. And the reply that he got from Marc-Andre Fleury, to me, was fantastic. It was Vegas with 3 exclamation points. And that, to me, was just, it was the moment that David Perron was like, you know what, I'm good. Like, if Flower is excited about coming to Vegas, so am I. I want to be a part of this, too. And I think that that set the tone for everybody. When you see Marc-Andre Fleury, 3-time Stanley Cup champion, Olympic gold medalist, a consummate pro, the ultimate team player, you see him having to leave the situation in Pittsburgh to come here and start a franchise. And he's ready to go. He's excited. He can't wait to get there. I think that is infectious.
And that is part of the unsung or unseen leadership of a Marc-Andre Fleury, because when you talk to him, he is a very quiet, oh, gee, shucks kind of fellow. Mm-hmm. Same with Gerard Gallant. And David Perron had went on to that and talking about Gerard Gallant, saying every player who I ran into in my career who had played under him loved him. And we knew that we were going to be there in the middle of the summer. More than 30 guys battled for a role that they never had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not just, it's not the Eric Howlas, it's not the Alex Tucks that he's talking about. It's the David Perrons. I mean, David Perron was drafted and has this high-end talent, and he's bounced around from a couple of different teams. You know, and you look at him and a player that's as good as at what he does as David Perron is, this is a chance for him to find that stability, to be a top-line player, to be a leader, which he talks about in the piece.
You talked about the events surrounding 1 October and how the team was still trying to find their own identity within the locker room and suddenly thrust into the spotlight of the city and mm-hmm. into a new role as comforter, as rallying point and rallying cry. And he said that, you know, he felt like it was really good they started on the road, kind of at least for a team's sake, to sort of bond together. And that the moments that he experienced during the pregame of the home opener and the first period are ones he'll never forget.
Hey, what do you say? He said it was magic. It was pure magic. And you know, you go back to what this team was able to do, and you start the season 7-1. And you all of a sudden you're sitting here and you're faced with, what is this team? Are they good? Are they bad? What are they just playing out of their minds? And you see this happen in all sports where things don't really go as you expect them to. And then all of a sudden, there's this moment that everybody galvanizes around. And all of a sudden, you're not playing for yourself. You're not playing for your next contract. You're not playing for me. You're playing for a collective we. But in this case, with the Vegas Golden Knights, the collective we isn't the locker room. It's not Gerard Gallant. It's not the 20 other guys that they step out on the ice with. The collective we is Las Vegas. And I think that when you're playing for something more than wins and losses, money for your next contract, when you're playing for the hopes and dreams and aspirations and lifting up an entire city, it makes it really, really easy to dig a little bit deeper at the end of your shift.
He goes on to talk about the players that were thrust together, and that seemed to be the narrative. And he says, you know, this team wasn't put together in a day. It was crafted, and it was really crafted by really smart hockey people like George McPhee. And I was on the press box earlier and talking about George McPhee and saying that, you know, you can certainly tell that his very first head coach was Herb Brooks there for the New York Rangers, because Herb Brooks's imprint on hockey is all over the way that George McPhee chooses to put together a team.
You know, and it's funny because this is almost the antithesis of what George McPhee did in Washington, in which he got to blow everything up and drafted Alex Ovechkin and built it around 1 or 2 very highly skilled elite players. This is different. And they always say the second time around, you're better at what you're doing. I don't think there are truer words spoken about George McPhee. What he's been able to do with this collection of players is fantastic, and I don't think he gets the credit he deserves.
Anybody had gone on to say, too, Ryan, and we'll have to go to break here real quick after this, is he said they knew how we liked to play even before we got there, and there's something there's something that's comforting in somebody knowing you better than you know you, mm-hmm. and then you getting to discover that you are what people had seen all along.
It's putting your players in the best possible position to exceed, knowing and understanding that you're giving them the chance to do something they've never done before. You know, if you have William Karlsson, you're expecting him to be a 20-goal scorer, but you don't surround him with anything that complements his game right now, he's going to flounder. But they didn't do that.
It's David Perron's piece at the Players Tribune. Like I said, playerstribune.com, or go to at Ryan Hockey Guy or at Magnum702 or at Clayton_JoeFan for the links on Twitter. When we come back, we're going to go out to the island there in New York City and talk about a really exciting news for that franchise.
I got 8 gifts coming, 1 for each night. It's my favorite holiday. You better treat a player right. This ain't Rosh Hashanah. This ain't Passover. It's Hanukkah, baby. Now move that over. It's even better than Yom Kippur. I got 7 gifts and I want one more. Christmas.
And welcome back to Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Holiday season abounds, and special happy Hanukkah to Ryan, the hockey guy, Wallace.
That plays every single day from now on.
I'm hoping that you and your family are enjoying a wonderful holiday season.
Oh, yeah, we are. Hanukkah's done, and what better time to play too short than after the holiday? Thanks, Chris.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Well done.
Looking out for you.
It's good. That's good. We haven't seen you in a while, so we had to hold it. We had to hold it off. A little bit of news, though, Ryan, around the NHL, and it has to do with arenas. And the New York Islanders have won their bid to build an arena at Belmont Park, so they should be heading back to the island. The proposal includes an 18,000-seat arena, a hotel, 435,000 square feet of retail space, and a 10,000 square foot innovation center that will be developed with input from the residents. So it looks like they're going to go back to the island, which is great for that community. And we all know what happened at Bridgestone Arena, what's happening here at T-Mobile, what that can mean for a community.
Yeah, no, it's really good for the community. It's going to be really frustrating, though, I think, for the community when, you know, the Islanders kind of run the same line as the Edmonton Oilers and the Detroit Red Wings, in which they go into this brand new facility, a non-playoff team, and without their star in John Tavares because he's going to sign somewhere else.
No, because Gary Bettman said to keep the Islanders healthy, strong, and on Long Island, this project was essential. So that's going to keep them healthy.
Yes.
And then John Tavares said, "The Islanders are called the Islanders for a reason."
Mm-hmm.
Apostrophe Ryan. He didn't actually say Ryan.
Right.
This is really where the team belongs, but unfortunately they belong without him. Is that what you're saying?
I think that he's right. That is where they belong. I think where John Tavares belongs is not on the island, no.
What if they go back to the fish sticks jersey?
No, that's not going to happen either.
No,
because, well, you know what? In order to get the arena, if that was like a stipulation that they had to go to the fisherman, to the Gorton's fisherman jersey, then they should have just stayed at Barclays.
I don't. Did the fisherman jersey make it to the NHL's 100 best jersey contest? Or?
I don't imagine it did. And if it did, whoever lobbied for that should be fired immediately.
I just hope that somebody has one and wears it and comes to us hello at the pregame show when the Islanders come to town.
Thanks or for any other team.
Oh yeah, or any other team. That's true. I saw a bunch of odd jerseys the other night. I don't get it. Wear your Golden Knights swag and listen to TC Martin. The Doctor. He's next.